This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, John Jastrzemski of The Ringer is going to join us. We will talk some Major League Baseball. Haven't talked a lot of baseball in these last couple weeks, and we will talk some NBA playoffs with the two series that resume on Wednesday. Are both series that gave you a surprising start, to say the least, on Monday. Two incredible games. Just one of the really one of the better nights in the NBA you can remember, with the Knicks coming back and upsetting the Celtics, and the Nuggets rallying back, both just an incredible, incredibly improbable fashion for both of them. Both pulled upsets, both favorites, not only 9-10 point favorites, but blew big leads late. Knicks are down 20 middle of the third quarter. Nuggets were down 9 with 3 minutes to go. They were down 16 in the second half. Just wild, wild comebacks. And by the way, and the Thunder coach Dagnall, he's a good coach. What he did at the end of the game, and it's been talked about already. And as we're recording this, the Tuesday night games are underway. Pacers are playing the undermanned Cavs. We'll see if the Cavs can get back on track, despite the fact they're shorthanded. And then Warriors, T-Wolves. We'll resume those series at a later point, discussing those. But these, to me, are the fascinating ones as we head into Wednesday. What Dagnall did is just so ridiculous at the end of the game. I understand. Look, I'm a big believer in you foul. And the fact that Barkley and some of these other guys were not realizing the nuance of, yes, you foul, but you just don't foul just to foul. You got to make the other team burn some clock. And if they had burned clock instead of just fouling right away, and Caruso, I don't know if you blame him or you blame the coach. It sounds like Caruso was just doing what he was told. And he had a great game, though. He's a tremendous player, underrated player. You make them burn clock, because if they had burned the clock properly, the Denver wouldn't have had a chance for the last second three, which Gordon hits. Gordon has played great here these last couple weeks. So incredibly inexcusable is really the best word for what Dagnall did. He was a good coach, a sharp coach, but my goodness, that was it cost him the game. It really cost him the game. It should be 1-0 OKC. So getting into my thoughts for these games in a minute. I will say one of the most dangerous things you can do, especially in the NBA, is overreact to game one. I can think of a number of series in recent years, in recent memory, where game one is in no way a representation of the rest of the series. And I think people see game one and they say, you know what, the rest of the series is going to be like that game. It's very dangerous. Remember, there was a Bucks-Celtics series in 2019 where the Celtics won in Milwaukee. That was when Kyrie was on the team. Game one, they won it convincingly. I remember Paul Pierce, the series is over. Boston's going to win. Boston never won another game the rest of the series. They lost 4-1. The Lakers, the year they won the title, they were down 1-0 to Portland in round one. They were down 1-0 to Houston in round two. They never lost a game the rest of those series. Toronto, the year they won the title, 2019, they were down 0-1 to Orlando. They were down 2-1 to Philly. They were down 2-0 to Milwaukee, and they won the title. So you can be very dangerous here overreacting to these game ones. As far as these game twos here, it's tough because I have my rule, my trend, where I just don't like betting against the team that lost game one at home. I don't like betting against them in game two. It's usually a blowout. It's usually a bloodbath. I'm actually going to take the dogs here. I know I'm walking into a lion's den here, hornet's nest, whatever expression you want to use. I'm breaking my rule. I will take the 11 with Denver, just because I think I still think OKC wins the series. I still think Boston wins the series, but there's concerns for both outside of the shooting for Boston. And I'll start with Denver. I just think that Jokic is so much bigger and stronger than anyone OKC can throw at them. And there is such a rebounding deficiency for OKC where I don't know if that's fixable. I don't know. Not that Jokic is going to dominate his way to winning the series, but I think Jokic's presence could keep them in these games. I'm getting 11. I think the situation of OKC's desperation is baked in here. So I'll take the 11. I called it OKC in six to start. I guess Denver winning the series is on the table now. It going seven is on the table. I don't see any reason to jump off of it, but Denver is live in the series. And you look at it this way, if you're Denver, if you got Jokic and all you need to do is win your home games, and you're going to the conference finals. So should be a good rest of the series, I would think. I don't know that OKC just rips off four straight victories, but I think that we are probably, look, the OKC is still favored in the series. They're rightfully favored as The series price has adjusted. OKC minus 290, but I think OKC wins. But I'll go with Denver plus the 11, and I'll actually take the Knicks plus the 10.5. This opened 8.5. That was one thing, but we're now talking about a 2-point adjustment. And here's the thing, the concern with Boston. I know they missed 43s, and a lot of them were good looks. 45 threes, and a lot of them were good looks. Brown does not look healthy. Jaylen Brown does not look healthy at all. And Porzingis gave them nothing. I don't know if he's healthy. He's dealing with this weird illness. It's kind of a vague situation. Hauser's banged up. Holiday came off the injury report, and he played. He looked okay, but they just feel like they are already kind of running out of steam here, the Celtics do. So I will take the Knicks plus the 10.5. Again, I think both teams down 0-1 respond and win, and I'm probably walking into a bad situation here, taking the points, taking the bait here with these dogs. But, boy, these dogs have been profitable, at least the last couple of days coming into Tuesday. We'll see what happens here on Tuesday as I'm recording this. But starting with Sunday night, really, you know, Saturday early evening, the Pacers win is 8.5-point dogs. The Warriors win is 2.5-point dogs. And then the two monster dogs on Monday. So if you had an inclination, you know what, I like some upsets here. I'm gonna do a 14 parlay of these underdogs on the money line. You walked into some cash because these have been some big-time upsets here on top of each other, which the NBA is usually more of a chalk sport, chalk league when it comes to the playoffs. So should be a fun day here in the playoffs this Wednesday. And round two, I've always said, is a good mix of quantity and quality. You get all the teams, the Heat of the world, the Grizzlies, all the teams that don't belong are out. It's down to, they don't call it the Elite Eight, but it's the Elite Eight of the NBA. So off to a good start. Hopefully it continues. With that in mind, we will talk to John Jastrzemski. We'll talk some NBA. We'll talk some baseball. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, we are back. Talk a little NBA, some MLB. You can catch him at The Ringer, the New York podcast, SNY. He's all over the place, and he's nice enough to join us now is the great John Jastrzemski. JJ, what's going on, man? Great time of the year. How is everything?
Will, I'm doing great. It's always a fun, spirited spring when you have one of the teams at Madison Square Garden rocking and rolling, and it was anything but easy in the first round for the Knicks against the Pistons. My minus 1.5 series bet was like hanging by a thread in that sixth game. They go and prevail thanks to Mr. Brunson. And I didn't necessarily have high hopes for the Celtics series, but when you overcome a 20-point deficit, when you survive overtime or you survive the end of regulation to get overtime and win the way you did, yeah, dude, I'm fired up for the rest of this series now. I don't know if the Knicks are going to win, but they got a pulse. I'm excited. Rock and roll. And life is good in the big city.
Is either team that lost game one in Monday in trouble, OKC or the Celtics, and who's in more trouble, if anyone?
So that's a great question. I asked the two guys that do the gambling pod this exact question at around 1:30 in the morning yesterday, and I'm with the guys on this. To me, it's Oklahoma City from this standpoint. I'm going to give you two reasons. Number one, they're going up against the best player in the world. So when you have Jokic on your team, you always got a shot. You know what I'm saying? So I see Jokic number one. He's up 1-0. He can smell it. He can taste it. He's one of those special players. The other reason I would say I think Oklahoma City might be in a little bit more trouble. There's an inexperience to that team that you don't necessarily have with the Celtics. Now, don't get me wrong with Boston. Porzingis and his status is a question. Jaylen Brown has absolutely no hops. And I think that was noticeable if you watched game one against the Knicks. You have Porzingis, you have Jaylen Brown, you have Jrue Holiday dealing with the hamstring. So you add all of that up, I can see why people would make the case, well, it's the Celtics, but they're still the reigning champs. They've lost games at home in the postseason before and have been able to overcome it and win series. And I got to give them the benefit of the doubt for being reigning champs, despite the little adversity they went through last year in postseason. This OKC team doesn't have that. So I think by default, it's Joker and it's the lack of championship pedigree. I'll say OKC by a smidge.
Yeah, and they don't have anyone strong enough to guard Jokic, and they're not a great rebounding team. Zubats in the first round could give them trouble. Even I thought Ben Simmons at times did a decent job on him. I mean, Holmgren has got the length and the arm and the reach and everything, but He's a string bean. Jokic is a strong, strong man, and there's just, I mean, you saw it yesterday with his ability to score and rebound. There's just not anybody from a matchup standpoint that's a great fit in terms of guarding him. Maybe they put Dort on him at some point, but that's a complete total mismatch. And Gordon's been great. Even Westbrook, I have to admit, Westbrook's been
Dude,
pretty
I'm
good.
not a big Westbrook
Me
guy. He's
either.
played really well this postseason.
Yes.
Really well. And Will, we got to do something here. You, me, everybody in the community. Don't allow us to bet on the Clippers anymore. Can we just stop? Like, stop. I'm done. Like, I can't believe I bet him for the series. I can't believe I was dumb enough to bet him in game seven. So when you said Westbrook, it kind of triggered that thought that I needed to remind you of. But yeah, the role players for Denver. There were a whole lot of questions. I had them going into the first series. Do they have enough guys around the Joker? I'm not necessarily in love with the guys that they have, but to your point, I think it's a good one. Got to give them credit. They've played really well.
Yeah, and look, Dagnall's a good coach. He overthought it. And by the way, Clippers, there's a lot of parallels. The Chargers were like this in football for years. Oh, look
Yes.
at the Chargers. They got Herbert. They got this. They got Rivers. And they never seem to live up. But look, I think Dagnall's a tremendous coach. He really overthought it. I'm sure a lot of people, went to bed. That was a late game on Monday night into Tuesday morning. But I get fouling up three, but he got a little too cute there. You don't foul where only a second comes off the board, off the clock. He shot a good, you fouled a good three point shooter, free throw shooter, and you end up with a bad free throw shooter on your end with Holmgren, so or a shaky one, 74, 75%. So I thought he really got too cute there.
I'm all for fouling up three. It's a big part of my sort of theory of watching basketball my entire life. But I think, Will, you nailed exactly what happened at the end of that OKC game. You don't need to foul up three when there's 11 seconds left in a game. To me, the perfect time to do it is that like 5 second, 6 second. And I know the scary, I guess, principle that's in his mind is, hey, at 11 seconds, the way these guys shoot in the NBA, you'll have somebody pop one from like beyond half court. But if that's the situation and somebody with 10 or 11 seconds is going to pull up right on the other side of half court, I almost think you have to allow that. You say, you know what? If you're going to take that shot and if you're going to hit that shot, more power to you because it's not a high percentage shot.
If I gave you a recalibration here, a prediction right now, who wins both of these series in how many games? And do you like anything for Wednesday? Celtics laying 10 and a half. We see it all the time. These teams lose game one at home. They tend to roll in game two. 10 and a half is a little expensive, but I get it. Same thing with OKC, who's laying 11 for Denver. So the two games on Wednesday and the two series thoughts overall.
So I thought both favorites would win. I picked Celtics in five. I picked OKC in six. I think if you were to give me a little mulligan, like we do over at the first tee at Silver Lake Golf Course, I'd go Celtics in six. I'll say the Knicks get another game here. I think the Knicks will get at least one at Madison Square Garden. And then, I think Boston ultimately will take care of business. And I think this Denver OKC series is going the distance. I do. I think Denver is going to play well in the altitude. I think you're going to have a monster Jokic game. See, that's the thing, Will. You look at his stat line. For people who didn't watch the game late on Monday night, they're going to be like, oh, Jokic, what an unbelievable stat line. It was a quiet, monstrous stat line for Jokic. Like, all of a sudden, it kind of like snuck up on you where you're like, whoa, I can't believe he's putting up these numbers because it feels like it's not his normal self. He's going to have one of those games where he is just in the middle of everything, impacting everything. So I think what you see is going to have their hands full. I think they'll find a way because they are deeper and they are better. I'll say the favors prevail, but it's going to be tougher than you thought.
Switch over to baseball here. The Yankees, about what, 5, 6 weeks into the season, you could look at it one of two ways. You could say, if it weren't for Devin Williams, and he's been awful, if it weren't for Devin Williams, this team would be, a good 4 or 5 games better. You could also look at it and say, the games Fried doesn't start, this team is very mediocre. Judge is obviously on another level. What are your thoughts on the Yankees here, 6 weeks or so in the season?
They look like an above average baseball team. Now, the good news for them, Will, they might be good enough to win the American League. The American League stinks. I mean, I know the Detroit Tigers at the moment have the best record in the AL. I have a ticket on the Tigers to go win their overs for wins. I have them to win the AL Central. So I am happy about that. But they are not the Dodgers. They are not the Padres. They are not the Mets. The point being is the Yankees are in a good spot in the American League. Now, as far as what you've seen with the team, a lot of the advanced stats love their offense right now. They love their offense. I don't see it. To me, there are a couple of just massive black holes within the lineup where you're getting absolutely no production. You're getting nothing out of third base. Right now, Jazz Chisholm is out, so you're going to get nothing out of second base. And then you have the youngsters who, to me, have been very up and down. Volpe's been very consistently inconsistent. Wells got off to a slow start. He's starting to come around. I think he'll be fine. And then you have this kind of glut within the outfield because Trent Grisham, who, by the way, should have been playing over Alex Verdugo last year in the postseason, but that's a story for a different day. He's been amazing to the point where you can't take him out of the lineup for the time being. So what does that mean? That means either Jason Dominguez or Cody Bellinger, who you paid a whole lot of money to in the offseason, one of those guys is going to be on the bench. And that's an uncomfortable position, I think, for Aaron Boone because he's either sitting a youngster who you want to play and you want to gain experience, or you're sitting a guy who has a very accomplished back of the baseball card that's not delivering right now for the Yankees. So, to answer your question, there's questions for me with the lineup. Four and five in the rotation is awful. Freeze's been amazing. Rodon has been good. It's been good. They got to figure out what the deal is with Schmidt's health. You can't count on a guy like Carlos Carrasco in the second half of this year. So when we talk Yankees and deadline, to me, it's hey, how do you get reliable workmanlike starters? Forget about another ace. You have an ace, you have Fried. You're probably going to get a heel back who should help and be a front end starter. Rodon's been fine. Get me a guy or two, Will, who could go six quality innings, who can go and lengthen out that rotation. That to me would make a world of difference with the Yankees and might be the difference between winning the division, being a wild card team, and missing the playoffs altogether.
I know you and I were both high on the Red Sox and their chances coming into the season. What have you seen from them? Do you think they're the team that could threaten the Yankees?
So I think they are the team, but they have a lot of the same questions, Will, that the Yankees are running into. You know, like that's the interesting parallel between the Red Sox and the Yankees. They lose Cassis, who's probably done. You wonder if it opens the door for them to play Devers at first base. That's a tough transition to make in the middle of the season, but all of a sudden they now have a need at first base for a guy that they had high hopes for in Cassis. Their pitching has been up and down. I think that's a kind way of saying it. Bullpen is a work in progress for them. So you add all of that up, they've played very unfundamentally sound baseball. They've been a very sloppy team if you watch them over the first month and change of this year. I think Cora will get them playing a better brand, but I'm not watching the Red Sox over the first month of the year saying, wow, I'm really scared of that team. Like if I'm the Yankees, I'm like, yeah, they're on a. I think if we're at our best and they're at their best, I think we're better. That's what I'd be saying right now if I'm in that Yankee clubhouse. So I like the Red Sox. I think they'll be in a mix. They'll be in a mix, but they have not come out of the gate, Will, as impressive as I thought they would.
And the Orioles just don't have enough pitching.
They have no pitching. They have no. The Orioles can swing the bats. The Orioles are starting to figure it out in their bullpen. That rotation is
Horrible.
awful. It's awful. And losing Grayson Rodriguez was a killer for them. Absolute, absolute killer for them. Their lineup can carry and mask some deficiencies, though. So it's interesting. Out of the three other teams in the AL East, Toronto, Baltimore, Tampa. Tampa's smoke and mirrors. We all know that. Toronto has pieces, but there's just something about the look and the feel of their team. They never seem to put it together. I feel like out of those three, Baltimore would be the most likely to make a move if they could just figure out a way to get anybody out.
AL West is interesting because Seattle's actually shown some offense. The Bryce Millers of the world haven't pitched well. Gilbert's been hurt. Kirby's been hurt. So they've won in different ways. I think Texas is a team that a lot of people liked. I liked. They haven't scored runs. When you look at the names in that lineup, you're like, man, how does this team not score? But Seager's in and out of the lineup. A lot of guys are hurt. Some guys are not producing. The Athletics are maybe a sleeper team. I don't know if they're good enough to actually win that division, although I thought about them in that 15 to 20 range. What do you make of the AL West in general? And Houston is clearly not the team they've been the past, decade or so.
Listen, Houston is not the team they've been, but they're always a threat. They're always a factor. You got to respect that because they have the pedigree and the culture. It's interesting with Seattle. You're so right about this. Seattle has been a team pitching, pitching, pitching. Their pitching hasn't been that great. They're scoring a ton of runs. For Seattle, they're scoring an insane amount of runs. Is that sustainable? Not sure about that. I still think Texas Will is going to figure it out in this AL West because their pitching has done the job. I don't make a whole lot in the hitting coaches. I don't know if you do. I know they just fired the hitting coach and hired Brett Boone. Sometimes it's just an optic. Sometimes it's just a matter of, hey, we need to give somebody a kick in the ass. Maybe this will wake up a bunch of hitters that aren't giving us a whole lot of production. I still think Texas can be all right in this division. They're not buried. I mean, at 3.5 games out of first place, they're a game under 500. And look, I don't think Oakland will win the division. I do think Oakland has a chance to threaten for the playoffs all year. They have a lot of offensive talent. Their pitching, it's not great, but
Great
they add
closer.
Severino. And if they have a lead at the end of these games, brilliant point. It's game, set, match. So I bet them as an over at 71, 72, whatever it was. I feel great about that over. Great about that over. I think the A's will have a winning season for what it's worth. I do.
Nationally, boy, there's a lot to sort out there. A lot of good teams. We'll start with the Mets. You got to feel good about where you are with the Mets. I know the schedule's been soft. You could poke holes in that, but for Soto to have done as little as he's done, and you're still in first place in the position you are, you got to feel good. Would you agree with that?
Oh, no doubt. And it's all about the pitching lab for the Mets. That to me is the biggest reason why we're talking about them as a first place team. What David Stearns and what Jeremy Hefner are able to do in cultivating, nurturing, growing starting pitchers. Well, Griffin Canning's got like 5 or 6 wins. Tylor McGill has been unbelievable. They've turned Coy Holmes into a productive starting pitcher. So those to me are the elements at play here for, well, why are we talking about the Mets as a first place team? Why are the Mets able to survive what has been a very sluggish start from Juan Soto, who is showing signs that he's about to come out of it? And listen, it's a matter of when, not if, Soto's going to hit. You want to tell me Soto is going to put up the same numbers with the Yankees? Probably not. He's not going to have this prolific of power year. He's probably not going to be as good statistically as he was last year. But at the end of the day, his numbers are going to be there. He's going to have his production. He's going to help the Mets. The pitching is the main reason why they're in this spot. But then offensively, Alonso has been the best I've ever seen him. And I think a lot of it, to be honest, is the fact that you have Lindor and you have Soto hit in front of him. So he's getting a lot of good pitches to hit. He's hitting with ducks on the pond. And unlike last year, where it felt like the pressure of the contract was getting to him, he seems at ease. He seems at peace. He's got a great approach at the plate, and he's as dialed in well as I've ever seen him as a big leaguer.
Who are the odd teams out in the National League?
Okay. The West is fascinating because you got so many teams that can play. Mets are going to make it. I'm not ruling out the Braves yet. It's way, way too early to rule out the Braves. And we know what a rotten start they got off to. Six make it. So if I'm giving you, let's say, the Mets, the Cubs, who are off to a good start, great run differential. Dodgers. I think the Padres make it. That's four. I'm going to say either San Francisco or Arizona will make it. Not both. I think one of them will make it. I thought Arizona preseason. San Francisco obviously has surprised. I got to give them credit for that. I'll say one of those two. I think one of the NL East teams will get left out. I think either the Braves or the Phillies will get left out. I do not think all three in the NL East are going to make the playoffs. That's my gut.
Who's the best team in baseball?
It's still the Dodgers.
Okay.
Until I see it. And they have problems.
That pitching though, I would probably, if you twist my, I'd probably still say Dodgers, but they're every 2 or 3 days. It's not like one day out of five, they throw out somebody you basically never heard of. It's like two out of every three. It's like Landon Knack and the guy they threw on Monday, I never heard of, Ben Kasparis. I mean, they're really piecing it together. I know they have reinforcements coming, but it's tough.
They've done this before, though, Will.
Yeah.
They've done this before. And they're also a team that if the pitching is not right in July and they're not getting positive answers on a couple of these guys who are injured, they will go and add to the team. They added Jack Flaherty last year. They'll go and add whoever they need to go and add. They've not been great. I mean, they haven't been great, especially for their standard. But who are you going to give that nod to? I can't give it to the Mets. Not with the schedule they've played. I think the Mets are really good, but I would not give them that edge, that nod yet. I'm not there yet with the Cubs, as impressed as I've been. And Tiger lineup. You love the Tiger lineup?
No.
I think it's the Dodgers for now. That could change, but for now it's the Dodgers.
I wouldn't give the answer, but it did creep into my head that the Padres, once they get the Merrills back of the world, they get their lineup back with their bullpen, they're really good. Remember, they led the Dodgers 2-1 in division round and had a home game with Cease going against the bullpen game for the Dodgers. Dodgers were very close to getting knocked out in the division round last year. They were able to get off the mat and obviously win it.
The Padres, it's amazing. You're so right. They were the toughest challenge for the Dodgers last year. Hands down. They handed the Dodgers an elimination game down 2-1. Real and spectacular. They're dangerous. They're dangerous. But they're another one of these teams that, for whatever the reason, well, it seems like they don't have postseason success. You know, they got to the NLCS a couple of years ago. They won their first round series against the Braves last year. But it feels like the Padres always come October are just like a hair short. Just something to think about.
Last one. How many games did the Rockies win?
Oh God. Let's see. The Rockies right now are at 6-28. This is like a White Sox conversation. White Sox not much better, by the way. They got 10 wins.
Some terrible teams.
They really are. I will say the Rockies get into the low 50s. Is that too many?
Oh, yeah, I think
You
it
think
might
it's
be
too
too
many?
many.
Oh boy.
Their
I'm gonna
over
say
under
like,
update is 45.5. I think that might be too many. I think it's possible
under 50? Oh
I think it's
boy.
possible they don't get to 40. I mean, they're gonna
Under
get,
40? So what did the White Sox win
I
last
think
year?
they
Out of
got
curiosity.
40. I always look this up and I always forget. Either 41 or 43. But the National League is so good. I mean, their schedule, the Rockies' schedule in May is really, really
I'm
tough.
just thinking that teams will come to Coors Field and they'll lose a couple of those Coors Field games, you know?
Yeah.
Problem is the Rockies can't get anybody out either, so I get it. I'll still say it's in the like the they'll put together a winning streak at some point. I'll say like right around 51 wins.
41 and 121 for the White Sox last year. Yeah. That
That's
might.
hideous. When your team is that bad, you got to sit through all those games. I mean, you understand why you get checked out by June or July. I get it.
JJ, this was always fun, man. Appreciate it. Hopefully we'll do it again soon. Let everyone know where they can catch your stuff.
Well, appreciate it, man. New York, and the East Coast Bias Ringer Gambling Show. You want to check that out on the Ringer, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And we're rocking and rolling on SNY. I'm going to be taking a week off as we wait for our first born to arrive. We'll still have the podcast up and running, but my return to TV will be Juan Soto's return to Yankee Stadium. So perfect timing.
Wow, what's the date of that?
May 16th.
Well, that's a little earlier this year. I miss when it was the full three games for each in Yankee Stadium and Mets. I miss when it wasn't. I used to love Interleague.
May is too early. I'm
May
right
is
there
too
with you.
early, and I don't like when it's year-round. It used to be special. It was like a week or two in June, then a week or two in July, and
See,
it was
they'll
different.
never give up the money grab
I
because
know.
they know the Yankee Stadium and Citi Field crowd is going to eat it up. But it does make it special where it's three games, it alternates stadiums. And that way, when you actually get the Subway Series, it means something. You know, it's like a treat if you're doing
Yeah.
it every other year. I like that.
Absolutely. JJ, appreciate the time, man. Thanks.
Anytime, Will. Thanks, buddy.
All right. To John Jastrzemski, rate, review, subscribe. Goldboys.com is where the Discord is. Check it out there. We will be back Friday. See you then.